From LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
The Grace Hopkins Rummel Children's Fund at the Community Foundation of Louisville. Proud supporters of the Music Box as a part of its mission to advance children's literacy, arts, and health. Details about Grace and her fund on Instagram at Grace Children's Fund.
From Louisville Public Media, this is the Music Box. Sponsored by PNC and the Norton Foundation.
Welcome to the Music Box. I'm Fiona.
And I'm Kiana.
What do Missy Elliott, ZZ Top, The Weeknd, and Bjork all have in common? Some of their most famous tunes are products of the drum machine. Join us as we learn about the Rhythmicon, off-grid drumming, breakcore, and more on this episode all about the drum machine.
But Fiona, you're a drummer. Don't you feel like drum machines are going to take your job one day?
While some people feel like drum machines are a threat to drummers and music in general, I like to think of them more as a tool separate from live drumming. With more tools in your belt, you have more freedom as an artist to create the sound you want.
That makes perfect sense. I've always thought of drum machines as just another percussion instrument. It's all about the timbre you want at that moment. Now, as for the history of the drum machine, we find ourselves in 1931, where Leon Theremin was working on the Rhythmicon.
Known as the world's first drum machine, the Rhythmicon was invented to reveal connections between rhythms and pitches. You can hear how it influenced the sounds of drum machines today with its repetitive electronic rhythms. The sounds you are hearing are being made by spinning discs inside the Rhythmicon that have holes punched out of them in specific patterns. On one side of the disc is a light bulb, and on the other side is a device picking up the light known as a photoreceptor. When the light makes it through the hole and onto the photoreceptor, a sound is made.
Mathematical. A decade later, instrument company Chamberlin invented a drum machine called the Rhythmate that would sit next to an organ and act as the rhythmic accompaniment. Another decade after that, popular Keys brand Wurlitzer came out with a similar but improved instrument called the Sideman. It played basic grooves like waltz, cha-cha, and bossa nova. As it became more popular, those traditional grooves continued to be included in many machines still to this day.
The biggest difference between the Rhythmate and the Sideman was how they made their sounds. The Rhythmate used recordings of a live drummer, while the Sideman used mechanical sounds to make its stock grooves.
Those stock grooves were incorporated into machines like the Maestro Rhythm King MRK2 from the 70s. Sly and the Family Stone gave it its big moment in their song Family Affair in 1971. This tune was the first using a drum machine to reach number one on the Billboard Top 100 charts. This set the tone for many other musicians of the time to incorporate that sound in their music, and they used a lot of the same equipment to achieve that sound until the 80s when they started going digital.
This means that the sounds made by these new drum machines were recorded onto and played back by a computer chip instead of sound-generating equipment inside the machine. At this point, drum machines went from a selection of stock grooves to a tool for composing drum patterns from scratch, much different from where we started.
One of the first examples of this new type of drum machine was the Linn LM1, released in 1980. Like the Chamberlin Rhythmate, the LM1 sampled the sounds of a live drummer. These sounds could be programmed and changed with the knobs on the board, including features like shuffle feel, accents on certain hits, a full mixer, and quantization, which we'll talk more about later.
The LM1 wasn't exactly available to the everyday musician. It cost a whopping $5,500 in 1980, which in today's cash would be almost $20,000. only already established studios and musicians like Michael Jackson, Prince, and Stevie Wonder could afford to own them.
Luckily, at the same time, instrument company Roland released a similar programmable drum machine called the TR-808. Because the 808 was analog, the cost was much lower than the digital LM1, coming in at a cool $1,195 or $4,300 in today's money. The analog sounds caused people to think it sounded cheesy and synthetic at first, tanking the TR-808's success. Many machines ended up in pawn shops for even lower prices, thus giving underground musicians access to buy it and experiment. Around this time, hip-hop was emerging as a popular style, and many artists used the sound of the 808 as a feature in their songs. Not long after, the sound of the 808 and the 909, released 3 years later, became ingrained in popular music. Artists across all genres and time used these machines, including Whitney Houston, Radiohead, Kanye West, Bjork, Daft Punk, and Madonna. Just to name a few.
While these electronic drum patterns served their purpose, the first person to really humanize the drum machine was producer James DeWitt Yancey, otherwise known as J. Dilla. But first, a word on quantization. Quantization is a feature that came standard on most drum machines of the 1980s and 90s. Its function was to even out an inconsistent pattern played by a musician by snapping it to a metronomic grid, cleaning it up, and making it steady. To give you an example, here's a beat before quantization. And here's the same beat using quantization.
J. Dilla actually opted out of using this feature, creating a laid-back, swung feel that became quintessentially J. Dilla. Many musicians still try to replicate Dilla's groove today. J. Dilla popularized the Akai MPC 3000. Because his sound was so distinct, a lot of modern producers buy the MPC to try and achieve a similar sound in their own music.
The MPC 3000, released in 1993, was one of the first drum machines to offer a sampling feature, giving the player full control of the sounds they wanted to use. Sampling is when an artist uses snippets of previously recorded music and reimagines them into a new song. Here's an example from J. Dilla's track, Don't Cry, that uses only samples from the Escort song, I Can't Stand to See You Cry. With this tune, Dilla shows us how even melodic samples can be used as percussion.
J. Dilla left an indelible stamp on music history that we can still hear today in tracks by musicians like Erykah Badu, De La Soul, A Tribe Called Quest, The Roots, Busta Rhymes, and more. You can even see Dilla's Akai MPC 3000 on display in Washington, D.C. at the National Museum of African American History.
The music we've just talked about informs genres like dubstep and trap. The drum machine's effect on popular music is also evident through live drummers emulating its sound. Drummers like J.D. Beck, Mark Juliana, and David King all use machine-like patterns and sounds in their playing. Here's David King from The Bad Plus playing a cover of the Aphex Twin song, Flim. You can hear the influence of the drum machine in the quick, sporadic figures and the drill sounds that King uses throughout the song.
Even though the drum machine has been labeled inhuman, throughout history we've seen how it can be used as a tool to connect musicians, encourage creativity, express emotion, and make something totally new. Drum machines have inspired many different genres, from the styles we've just heard to newer styles of electronic music like breakcore. Here's a breakcore track called Jungle Tools by Reizoko CJ.
Thanks for exploring drum machines with us today. Make sure to stick around after the credits for a musical minute with Colleen Phelps.
Additional lessons and resources can be found at musicboxpod.org. I'm Kiana.
And I'm Fiona.
And you've unwrapped another wonderful gift from the Music Box.
The Music Box is a production of Louisville Public Media with support from PNC, the Norton Foundation, and the listener members of Louisville Public Media. This episode was recorded in collaboration with Louisville Central Community Center and written by Kiana Dale and Fiona Polinsky. Technical direction, editing, and sound design by Alex Cooper.
Our executive producer is Danielle Gillum. Special thanks to Kirsten Fosgraf, Laura Ellis, Gabrielle Jones, and Angelo Wilson.
Additional voices include Story Crawford, Malaysia Reed, Nazari Reed, Colleen Phelps, and me, Alex Cooper.
You can get additional resources and all our episodes at musicboxpod.org.
Colleen the Percussionist here again. You know what that means. It's time for our percussion game, Strike, Shake, or Scrape. I'll play one of my many instruments, and you guess how I play it. Do I strike it like hitting a drum, shake it, or scrape across it? Here goes. I promise there isn't a bug in the room where you're listening. This instrument has a lot of names. It's a lot like something called a wiro or a rasp, but the names just mean that you scrape it. This one is meant to sound like a cricket, and it's even carved wood to look like a cricket. Sounds like summer.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.